I concede! Natasha yells. Anjali clambers to her feet, favoring her wounded leg. I concede! She also yells. They wave their arms at Tarek high in the imperial box. I rise, supporting my injured arm and struggling to regain my breath. The audience is clapping, peters out, changing to outraged shouting. The gongs call for order, and Tarek motions for quiet.
What is the meaning of this?
Calls the Raja. My opponents have conceded! My voice barrels across the oval arena and up into all three tiers.
They have withdrawn their challenge.
This is true.
Anjali and Natasha answer as one.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Lies!
Lakia rushes from the floor-level entry behind us.
The Viraji promised them riches and favors if they forfeit.
Participating in the tournament was their choice, I counter. They challenged me according to their will, and with that same will they concede. From afar, I see Tarek calculating the impact of this unexpected finale. The people desired a champion who would demolish her opponents. I have retained my title by default, but I have still won. The tournament is over. Tarek has what he wants. He has me.
The challengers stepped forward, he says. And they may step down.
Tarek's false tone of apology hints at glee. He's glad to move forward with our wedding.
Since there are no other challengers, this concludes the tournament. The Viraji is our rightful champion.
Spectators cheer and boo. Those who favored me winning are satisfied, but the rest grumbled their disappointment. Anjali limps to me and swings her arm over my shoulder.
You're adult.
Natasha loops her arm around Anjali's waist, supporting her other side. A brave dolt.
Thank you for trusting me, I say, resting against them.
Natasha leans forward, looking past Anjali.
Just keep your word.
I will.
I am amazed that Natasha conceded. Right up until she sank her blade into the ground, I was certain she would kill me. But her time as a courtesan has softened her. The refuse cart rolls past us to collect Farisha's remains. Regret for her and the other courtesans who died here scratches me raw. I bow my head and offer the prayer of rest. Natasha and Anjali join in, and we finish praying together. I glance up at the wives and courtesans watching us from the terrace. This is the start of a new sisterhood in Tarachand. Natasha and I help Anjali hobble toward the gate. We make it only a few steps before a voice calls out.
I challenge the Viraji to a duel.
32. A blanket of stunned silence falls over the amphitheater. Lakia storms into the center of the battle ring and repeats her declaration.
I challenge the Viraji to a duel.
Her voice drives a spear of dread through my heart. Usually Lakia does not bother with her husband's lesser-ranked women, but she let her pride override her caution once before when she challenged Mathura. That battle ended in Lakia's triumph, but left the courtesan lame. I had thought that my securing the throne might draw Lakia back into the ring, but now that it has, I question my ability to see this through. The spectators stomp their feet in support of prolonging the tournament, but I cannot tell if Tarek's mind is muddied enough with Apong to allow me to fight. Lakia wants me gone from her husband's palace, and her desire is so strong that she is willing to risk her rank as kindred. I have no doubt that she challenged me with full confidence that she will defeat me, as she did Mathura. Lakia plans to win, maintain her rank, and be rid of me for good.
You wish to fight my Viraji?
Tarek calls down to his number one wife.
As kindred, it is within my power to challenge any wife or courtesan to a duel.
And it is within the Viraji's right to decline,
Tarek reminds her. Mathura could have declined the kindred's challenge, but she did not. Neither will I.
I accept,
I exclaim.
On two conditions. The Kindred and I will battle hand to hand, no weapons. And if I win, your courtesans may go free.
Lakia calls out her reply.
I agree to those terms, but I have my own condition. If the Viragi loses, your courtesans die.
I curse her under my breath. Tarek was already planning to kill the courtesans, but this way he can murder them with the backing of every spectator here. And I will wear the blame.
The Raja's courtesans cry with outrage. They do not know that Tarek already aims to be rid of them.
I look for Mathura in the group of those protesting, and find her, staring at me in silence. She is too far away for me to read her expression, but I pray that she knows that I will defend her life. The Raja raises his hand for quiet. His infuriated courtesans are the last to hush. Natesha and Anjali hold on to me as we wait in tense silence for his decision. Tarek's vanity at having selected me as his champion has been compromised by the concession of my contenders. The only way to confirm that he chose a warrior befitting of the status of Enlia's 100th Rani is for me to shed sufficient blood this day. But he may not want to let me compete now that he has me locked in as his bride.
You have my support, he says, lowering his arm in finality. The battle ends when one of you concedes.
Panic crowds in around me. I am to battle the Kindred. Great Anu, I hope I made the right choice.
Tarek returns to his throne, and Natesha and Anjali press close to my side.
Did you know Lucky would challenge you? Natesha asks.
I thought she might. She's as vain as Tarek.
Anjali frowns up at the Raja. I hope you have a plan, she says.
My deal with Lakia has threatened their lives, but I suspect that Anjali is displeased for another reason. My agreement with her father had been going as planned, but now I am risking his ability to retrieve the Jala. For me, this is not about the book. Hastin and the Buddhas left Devon to be executed. I no longer trust that they will free the courtesans.
Natesha wraps my cut arm with a piece of cloth provided by a healer.
Do you know what you're doing? She says. I'm doing what Ki would have me do. Pray for me. She ties off the bandage with a solemn frown.
I already have.
Lakia waits for me in the battle ring. The blood of the thief she killed speckles her trousers. My uniform has gone brown with dust. I join her, straining to stand tall against my fear. I have lost favor with the crowd. Fewer chant my name than they do hers. She needles me with a smirk.
You naive girl. You really think you can defeat me?
Afraid I might? I hunker down into my fighting stance.
You better pray you do. She glares with the heat of a thousand suns.
The gongs ring. Lakia lunges and seizes a fistful of my hair. She swings me around by the head and lights explode in my vision.
I am the only wife Tarek needs, she says.
She knees me in the back, pushing me forward. I stumble away and turn back to her.
He doesn't love you or me. He has only ever loved Yasmin.
I somersault forward. My feet connect with her lower abdomen. She lurches but stays on her feet.
I am the Kindred. No one, especially not Yasmin's daughter, will steal my rank from me.
She swings. But I am so startled by her words that I do not duck.
Her right fist connects with my chin and her left fist drives into my belly. I double over, robbed of breath.
She locks an arm around my head.
You didn't know. She punches me in the side, crunching my rib cage.
The second I saw the dead infant boy next to Yasmin's body, I knew he wasn't hers.
Lakia knees me in the face. I fall on all fours, my nose gushing blood. She kicks me in the side. Pain shoots through my torso and into my lungs. Every breath is like inhaling shards of iron.
The midwife said the child was a healthy girl when she fetched Tarek and me.
But
by the time we reached Yasmin's room, the baby was a dead boy. The midwife claimed she was confused, but I knew she was lying. I could not be so fortunate as to lose my sister and Tarek's heir. She kicks my ribs again. I roll onto my side, wheezing. I knew you would return, she says. And when you walked in looking like Yasmin with your long hair, she tugs my braids so hard that stars shoot across my vision. I knew the time had come to defend what is mine. Lakia stomps on my forearm where Natasha sliced me. My arm explodes with agony. The kindred shoves me onto my back and sits on my chest. I grunt under her weight. I told Tarek you are Yasmin's daughter. His daughter, but he refused to listen. Her knee digs into my side, pressing on the injured ribs. My head reels as though I am rolling downhill. He refuses to see what is plainly before him, the lovesick fool. Lakia squeezes down on my windpipe, sealing off my air. I clutch her bare shoulders and try to push her off, but she is immovable. My chest burns for air. I burrow my fingers into her skin, reaching for her inner fire. I tug, gently threading out her light. Her fingers cramp, letting up on my neck, and I gasp a cleansing breath. If you're right that I'm Yasmin's daughter, you're wrong about one thing. I wrap my powers around Lakia's soul fire. She sags closer, her color graying. I am not Tarek's daughter. I am the daughter of Abuta. I release her, and Lakia falls on her back, groaning. I straddle her hips and hold her down. Concede and I let you live. Speak a word about who I am, and I will use your bones as kindling. Lakia spits at me. Never. I place my hands on her face and push my inner fire into her. Her eyes go wide, the rims drying. Her lips crack, the skin peeling. My hands tremble from the effort of holding back the full force of my powers. Concede! I cannot push any more fire into her without scorching her, but I hold her as close to my blazing inner flame as possible. Still, she does not relent. She stinks of singed hair and her skin goes papery. My fingers start to glow. I have to pull back or I will kill her and everyone will see what I am. Concede! I half plead, half demand. Lakia nods in surrender. I shove myself off her and rise to the people's applause. Dizziness pummels me. I bend forward and clutch my knees. My head pulses with a headache of sharp needles digging into my eyes. I shut them and beg for unconsciousness to come. Behind you! Natasha shouts. I turn to see Lakia flying at me with a dagger. I grab her wrist and grapple against her. My legs quake and I sink under her might. She steadily lowers the pointed tip toward my jugular. I have no powers left to parch her. The effort it took to restrain myself from scorching her has depleted my fuel, lowering my soul fire to shrunken warmth. My knees meet the dirt. Key, help me. Lakia looms over me, lowering her face to mine. The tip of the knife pricks my throat, releasing a warm stream of blood down my neckline. Time for you to join Yasmin. And Jaya. And Devin. I am tempted to let her end this. To let her send me to the beyond with those I love. But I will not go yet. I cannot leave this life until I finish my godly purpose. I reach inside myself for the last of my dwindling strength, and I push back at Lakia. I straighten and slam my forehead into hers, stunning her. Then I twist the blade around and plunge it into her chest. Lakia's eyes bulge. My own eyes brim with tears. Her blood seeps around our hands, between us, hot and slick. If her words were true, she is more than the Raja's kindred. She is my kindred. My mother's sister. The last of my family. She pitches forward. I catch her and totter to my knees, laying her on her back. She rasps, her breaths loosening to watery rattles. And then she breathes no more. Roaring ovations drift over me. I look up to the Imperial box and see Tarek clapping hardest. Lockia would be devastated to see him applaud her defeat. All she had ever wanted was for him to love her, to be his one and only, his true kindred. I sit heavily beside the fallen Ronnie. Resting my hand on her still chest, I send up a prayer of thanks to the gods for sparing my life. I have gotten what I came for. I am to wed the monster of the Tarachand Empire. I am to be the Raja's 100th queen. 33. A string of applause accompanies our return procession to the palace. I wave from Tarek's and my howdah at the people cheering my name. Though I have claimed the throne and won the rank of kindred, a feat no other Viraji has accomplished, I quickly tire of the praise. I am numb to the complimentary racket by the time Tarek escorts me to my chamber door. "Tomorrow at sunset you will be mine forevermore," he says, running his fingers through my hair. Sourness coats my mouth. I am haunted by Lockia's revelation about who I am. I want to discount her story of a disappearing baby as the rant of a jealous woman, but her conviction that I am Yasmin and Tarek's daughter seemed to be the crux of her hatred. She died believing it to be true. But Yasmin was not Abuta, and neither is Tarek. So if Yasmin is my mother, then my father must have passed on his Buddha powers to me. Still, I could be Tarek's daughter if he is a Buddha and has been concealing his powers. I have been hiding mine from him, and he could be doing the same. A storm of nausea swirls in my belly. Until I know who my parents are, there is a chance Lockia is right. I could be Tarek's flesh and blood. I must lie down, I say. I bid Tarek farewell and hurry into my room. Bile burns in my throat. I run past Asha to the wash basin and empty my stomach until all that is left are dry heaves. Asha cleans my face and helps me to my bed. A healer bandages my forearm and binds my middle with downy cloth. 2 of your ribs are broken. I will advise the Raja to leave the bandage on. Mortification warms my face. The healer means for me to wear this bandage on my wedding night. The idea of being with Tarek in such an intimate way was already disgusting to me. But now that he could be my father, I want to retch and retch until the thought is in me no more. The healer packs up and goes. Asha dresses me in a robe like the one I wore to the claiming. "You are to go to the chapel for your bridal markings," she says. I can find my own way, but Manas and another guard follow close at my heels. I ignore Manas, hardly able to endure his presence or the reminder of his betrayal. He clears his throat at the chapel door. "Congratulations, Viraji," he says. I slam him into the wall, pain lashing down my side. "Traitor," I say. "Do not speak to me. Devon was the traitor. Devon was good." I shove Manas tighter into the wall. His eyes shine with tears. "Devon was better than you or I will ever be." Exhaustion drains my temper, and my hands fall, letting him go. The second guard lowers his sword, which I did not see him draw. The palace residents must be aware of my failed escape, but Tarek would like to pretend that it did not happen, like Devon never existed. 3 sisters I do not know wait for me in the chapel. Per their directions, I disrobe and lie face down on the blanketed altar. They come forward with clay pots and thin-tipped brushes. I lie still, smelling the pungent tang of henna. They tickle swirling patterns of celestial glories on my arms and across my back. The sisters work through the night, their gentle hands and softly hummed prayers lulling me into a daze. In my wakeful moments, Lockia's claims about my parentage dominate my thoughts. I try not to dwell on it, but the possibility that I am preparing to wed my father consumes me with horror.
I need to know if Tarek is my father. And if he is, I swallow another upsurge of nausea. I will deal with that if it comes. At daybreak, my hands, feet, arms, and legs are covered with intricate designs of the sun, moon, and stars. The sisters also painted the number 1 onto the back of my hands. Now that I defeated Lakia, her rank of first wife belongs to me. They rub away the dried henna, revealing the dyed skin beneath, and redress me in my robe. I sit down on the altar cradling my sore side, and send them to fetch Brother Sean under the guise of wanting a blessing. While I await his arrival, I try not to let my sight stray to the place where Jaya died, but my attention settles there, and I see that her blood has been scrubbed clean. She would warn me not to let my mind wander to dark places, but I cannot shake her death from my head. Brother Sean comes in and shuts the door. I meet his gaze. Lakia told me I'm Yasmin and Tarek's daughter. If that's true, I can't figure out how I came to be a temple ward. But I think you know.
Healer Baka said you would piece it together.
He crosses the chapel to the altar.
She requested that I tell you, but I swore never to speak of it.
Tell me what Healer Baka has to do with this. I deserve the truth. Brother Sean sits beside me on the altar and expels a profound sigh.
I suppose you do.
He clasps his weathered hands in front of him.
You are not Tarek's daughter.
A relieved breath whooshes out of me. Whose daughter am I?
Yasmin and Kishan's.
The quiet echo of his answer drops through me. So Lakia was partly correct. I am Yasmin's daughter, but Lakia's jealousy blinded her to what everyone else could see. Yasmin loved Kishan, the Buddha leader she tried to escape with. Yasmin was carrying Kishan's baby, not a boy or Tarek's heir, as many supposed. A little girl and a burner like her father. Then tell me, my small voice grows. How did I come to be a temple ward?
2 people were present the night Yasmin died. Healer Baka, who was a midwife then, and me. Yasmin was sick during her pregnancy. Mortals do not fare well birthing Buddha children, and they often do so at the price of their own lives. When Yasmin heard of Kishan's death, her fragile body could not take the news. We tried to slow her labor, but she was too distraught. She delivered a healthy baby girl, but the birth depleted Yasmin's strength beyond repair. Soon after, in the midst of begging us to hide her daughter from the Raja, she passed away.
Heartache bludgeons me. I have heard others speak of Yasmin, and I have seen her tomb, but I have not mourned her death until now. She was my mother, yet I will never meet her. Her last words were pleas for my safety, yet I will never hear her voice. Brother Sean's elderly face bears every line of his grief.
Healer Baka had delivered a stillborn boy earlier that night, so we replaced Yasmin's daughter with the deceased baby boy. I took the infant girl and hid her in the Vani temple. When she was old enough to travel, I sent her to the farthest sisterhood temple from here. And Healer Baka went along to watch over her. Over you.
I am staggered by the number of secrets that he and Healer Baka kept. All this time Healer Baka knew of my parentage. Brother Sean knew it as well. But it was Lakia who told me. She was more honest with me than those I trusted. Why didn't Healer Baka tell me?
To protect you, and honor Yasmin's final request, we never spoke of your true identity to anyone. When I first learned you were coming here, I was distraught. Healer Baka and I worked so hard to keep you safe. But the gods directed you here for a purpose.
His voice drops to a coarse whisper.
Austin means to seize the palace as soon as you recover the Jale. He's waiting. outside the walls with 20 Buddhas ready to strike.
My patience has been filed down to a stub. I need another day to recover from the tournament and reflect on what I have learned about my parents. But there is no stopping the wedding. I would be less averse to proceeding tonight if I trusted Huston. But I do not trust him any more than I do Tarek. And I see no way to stop the Buddha warlord from attacking. All that I can do is fulfill my side of our bargain and pray that he does not escalate the war.
Tell him to wait for my signal, I say.
I will light the torches on the front gate, and then he may come, not a second before. We will start the new future of Tarachand with peace.
I will tell him.
Brother Sean studies the fresh henna markings on my hands and feet.
What will you do?
My part? I strategized for this night in the dungeons. Still, regardless of my forethought, my fingers quake with worry.
You are aware that the Raja's chambers were built with the same Buddha-repellent poison as the dungeons.
I am aware. I have not forgotten how I lost my abilities when I entered the atrium. But I will not face Tarek defenseless. Brother Sean pats my knee for support.
Remember, as soon as you see the Shala, do not delay. The Raja mustn't begin the ritual.
He glances through the chapel door, which Asha is opening.
Our time is spent,
he says.
I will see you soon at your wedding.
The next day, after I have spent hours being groomed from crown to foot, Asha tucks an exquisite gold-embroidered red sari around my waist. I have never seen a lovelier sari, I say, touching the stitching.
The Raja requested that you wear it, Asha says, pleading the embroidered side. It was his first wife's bridal sari.
I watch my staid reflection in the mirror glass as she finishes pleating, pinning, and draping the sari around me. Before today, hearing that I was to wear Yasmin's wedding sari would have spoiled the pretty clothes. Now, I am grateful to have something that belonged to my mother, to be close to her in some small part. I lost Yasmin's daggers and my slingshot the night of my attempted escape. I wish that I had them, but even if I did, I would have nowhere to conceal them. The fitted pleats of her exquisite bridal sari allow no room for weapons. As a final touch, Asha adds Yasmin's necklace. I stare into the mirror glass at the living spirit of my mother, wondering how she would kill Tarek if she were in my place. Another servant enters, bearing a velvet pouch.
The Raja sent this for the Viraji.
She and Asha watch me open the pouch to reveal a jar. I unscrew the top, and the scent of the ginger-lavender lotion escapes. My insides slope to my knees. Once again, Tarek is pushing Yasmin on me. Is it not enough that I dress like her? I must smell like her, too? I set the gift aside. Asha, I would like to be alone.
Right away, Viraji.
She and the other servant leave. Kneeling beside my bed, I dig my arm beneath my mattress up to my shoulder and pull out my last tonic vial, as well as the ointment Jaya gave me. Poison does not have the same comforting feel in my hand as a blade, but its secretiveness makes it deadlier. I tuck the tonic vial down the front of my blouse, and then Pariza and Ishana bustle in. I stash away Jaya's ointment in the pouch with the lotion. A contingency plan should my other efforts fail.
Kali, you're a vision, says Ishana.
Pariza rubs the hem of my sleeve. This is the lightest silk I have ever felt. My bridal sari wasn't half as elegant.
You weren't half as favored either, says Ishana.
Pariza cuffs her in the side of the head with my flimsy veil. Asha hurries in, her gaze apologetic for the interruption. I am not annoyed. I have not spoken to the chatty duo in days. Their prattle is welcome.
Everyone is talking about your performance in the arena, Ishana says, as she preens at herself in the mirror glass. We all agree you embodied the land goddess. You were a true sister warrior.
No one is sad Lakia is gone,
adds Parisa.
The mood of the wives' wing is brighter. All of us will get along better without her.
Ishana abandons her reflection to face me. She places my veil over the lower half of my face, hooking it behind my ears.
The rank tournaments are in the past now. With all of Tarek, Rani's claimed, and you as our kindred, we can live in peace.
Their outlook is encouraging, but leaves a bitter aftertaste.
So many died to reach this point.
I hope, with all my heart, that their sacrifice was not in vain. Shyla sweeps into the room and clasps her hands.
Kalinda, you look breathtaking. Do you have everything you need?
He won't return to your chamber tonight.
Yes. I hand Asha the velvet pouch containing the lotion and Jaya's ointment. Can you take this to the Raja's chamber? He favors the scent. Parisa reaches for the pouch.
What is it?
Can we smell? Asks Ishana.
Shyla loops her arms around Parisa's and Ishana's waists and steers them toward the door.
Let that be Kalinda's secret, at least for tonight.
I trail the giggling young women out of my chamber, the smooth tonic vial buried deep in my bodice. I doubt that every secret is deadly, but I fear that those are the only secrets I will ever know. 34. In comparison to the tournament, the wedding is a humble affair. We exchange vows on the terrace at the rear of the palace, overlooking the gardens. Brother Sean officiates, and Tarek gazes at me adoringly through the nuptials. I look down, lifting my chin as I swear to the gods that I will willingly submit to my husband in all things. That is the only promise that I am required to make. I will break it by day's end. At the conclusion of the ceremony, Tarek and I lead his wives and courtesans inside to the throne room. It has been set up to look like the tournament feast, but the tables are absent of the young faces who died trying to see this day as a bride. I should thank the gods I am not one of them, but my heart seeps only grief. Tarek, I refuse to think of him as my husband, and I kneel at a table on the dais. Lithophone players strike a lively song of celebration. The wives take turns laying tokens at my feet. Lip stains, silk, perfumes, but mostly veils. After tonight, I will be obligated to wear a veil in public, too. Welcome, sister, the Ranis say. As part of their offerings, they kiss my knee to show they bend to my authority as kindred. Tarek drinks beside me, draining a full chalice of Apong. I want to slip my tonic into his cup, but I have to delay until I see the book. I do not like relying solely on poison. I want a weapon with a blade of defense that cuts. I scan the tables for supper knives, but I see none. My hands curl in on themselves. Tarek must have learned from Gautam's death. The Raja twirls a finger in my hair.
Traditionally, the wife dances for her husband.
I wore my mother's bridal sari for him. I swore to obey him, but I will not dance for him.
Perhaps the groom can dance for the bride.
Will it bring a smile to your face?
Tarek's hand creeps up my knee. My frown deepens in dissension.
Maybe.
Then I will try.
Tarek stands and invites his other wives to join him. Parisa and Ishana rise and spin with him, clapping their hands to the beat. Mathura sits off to the side with her bad leg resting on a chair and smokes a hookah pipe. She does not come forward with a gift or to offer congratulations. I do not expect her to. Natessa approaches my table and lays a veil at my feet. Yatin watches her from the doorway. I have missed him since he was reassigned.
For you? She says of her gift.
You're still here.
So are you. She eyes me curiously. I have known you many years, Kalinda. You are not the type to submit to a man.
I could say the same for you. Natasha sits on the satin floor cushion beside me. Tarek will not hand out pensions, so only a few of the courtesans have requested to leave. This life is not much, but most agree it is better to work in the palace than to be destitute in the city. I should not be troubled by their decision to stay. Most of these courtesans did not challenge me in an effort to improve their lives. But I loathe the idea of Natasha remaining a slave to the Raja's men of court. You could request to rejoin the sisterhood, I say. They may make an exception for you. That is another kind of submission. Natasha plucks at a loose thread on her skirt. I would like to open an inn, but women innkeepers are not respected. No one would come. I would, I say. Natasha's eyes mist with tears. I lighten the mood by laying my leg on her lap. Are you going to kiss my knee? She pushes my leg off playfully, her tears forgotten, and we laugh. Tarek returns to our table and grins at me.
There's that smile. Ready to go, love?
My powers flare at the threat of being alone with him. I stomp them down with a nod. Natasha hugs me. Be careful, she whispers. I force a smile of thanks, pretending that she congratulated me, and rise to leave with Tarek. Ranis and courtesans toss out prayers as we pass by. Most utter pleas to the land goddess, asking her to bless us with fertility. I counteract their wishes with a prayer of my own. Please, Anu, grant me the strength to end Tarek before he touches me. Several guards wait outside the Raja's bedchamber. We pause at the door, and one of them pats me down for hidden weapons. My pulse soars when the soldier's hands rise to my bust, skimming the tonic vial.
Ah, Tarek says, stopping the guard. Save something for me.
His other guards chuckle, and my face flushes hot. Tarek and I step inside his chamber, and my powers instantly diminish to a sleepy ember beneath a dusting of ash. I eye the room for a weapon, but there is nothing useful. Even the oil lamps are of no help. They are tall and up high and too heavy for me to pick up and swing at his head. I am relieved to find the velvet pouch with the lotion he gave me on the corner of the canopy bed, which is twice the size of mine. Behind the bed, from floor to ceiling, hangs a tapestry of Anu. The sky god sits atop the sun, sharpening his blade of light on the sun's rays. Opposite the bed, an immense balcony overlooks the desert night and darkened city skyline. The room and the view are stunning, but the person I am sharing them with would just as likely bruise my jaw as kiss my cheek.
"Would you like a drink?"
Tarek says, pouring me a cup of wine from a serving tray on a console table. I take the chalice and sip. "Won't you join me?" I say. He unbuttons his jacket collar.
"I have had enough spirits tonight."
I try for a persuasive smile. "It's our wedding night. When better to overindulge?"
"I will indulge later."
Tarek skims a finger across my jaw.
"The best is yet to come."
I frown at my wine, and he steps over to his bureau. He pulls out a book and a small oil vessel, setting them by the drink tray. The brass vessel is small. I could easily slip it into my pocket. The book has an old, weathered leather cover with a waxen string binding. I dare not look at them long, but I know what they are. The Jala and Tarek's collection of 1,000 drops of Buddha blood.
"You enraged me in the dungeons," he states without ire.
"Forgive me," my voice emerges scratchy. "I was distraught." A storm brews in his eyes.
"Over him?"
"Over my friend. May I earn your forgiveness?" I lift my chalice. "Let us drink to a new beginning."
A thoughtful gesture, but no.
He flashes a predatory grin.
"I wish to be lucid for my night alone with you."
I smile faintly. He has rendered the tonic hidden in my bodice useless by not drinking. I need time to think. My gaze falls on the lotion that Asha left on the bed. I pick up the velvet pouch and show it to him. Your gift. Tarek leaves the jala and the oil vessel and returns to me. He lowers the shoulder of my blouse. My heart drums in warning. Ginger lavender. Yasmin's favorite. He bends and kisses my collarbone. My repugnance is so strong that I nearly swallow my tongue. He relieves me of my chalice and drops his voice to a husky drawl.
Would you like help undressing?
I can manage. I slide behind the dressing screen and resist the urge to beat the barrier with my fists. What an infuriating man! Tarek has been a drunkard nearly every day I have been here, but now he will not take even a sip. I breathe slowly, willing myself to reorganize my thoughts. As fortune would have it, his lotion has supplied me precious time to think. With shaking hands, I open the pouch. The small ointment bottle Jaya gave me falls out. My contingency plan. Holding up the ointment bottle, I replay what Jaya told me about the poison. A single dab on her lips gave Gautam a headache, but she also suffered the effects. Her ointment must be more potent than my tonic. But I have never been exposed to this toxin, so I cannot say how it will affect me. Perhaps if I rub it in my hair before Tarek touches it? I open the ointment bottle and dip one strand of my hair in it. The poison immediately changes the color, fading the strand to fair blonde. I grind my teeth in frustration and pluck out the hair. I cannot spread the ointment in my tresses without Tarek noticing. My gaze falls to the jar of lotion. If one dab of the ointment is harmful, the whole bottle could be lethal. Quick as can be, I pour the ointment into the lotion, mix it in with a makeup brush, and reseal the jar.
Are you certain you don't need a hand?
Asks Tarek.
Almost done.
I discard my mother's bridal sari, blouse, and petticoat, and then unwind the bandage around my sore ribs. I stash the unused tonic vial inside my clothes and step out from behind the screen with nothing but the lotion jar. Tarek has removed his jacket and tunic. I am disturbed, yet pleased to see him bare-chested. We must touch skin to skin to transfer the poison. He saunters over to me, his gaze eating up my nakedness. I would be ashamed of using my body to entice him, except that I am his wife. I feel no dishonor in exploiting his weakness for flesh. On behalf of every woman he has terrorized, on behalf of my mother and Jaya, on behalf of myself, I will end his reign. Tarek strokes my hair.
You are exquisite.
I struggle against the urge to cover myself and open the lotion jar. He sniffs the sweet scent and smiles a boyish grin. He scoops up a generous handful and smooths it down my back. The toxins tingle as they bleed into my pores. If Tarek notices the warm sensation, he does not say so. He moves on to my arms, and then my chest, covering the henna markings with the oily lotion. He reaches my torso and slides his hands gently over my injured ribs. I wrap my arms around his shoulders, sucking my teeth against the flare of pain in my side. My bare arms seek his skin, and our chests press together. The lotion is slick between us as more of it transfers to him. Tarek kisses below my ear.
You smell like paradise.
He buries his face in my neck. My vision blurs and my heart thumps as fast as a rabbit's. I can feel the poison slithering inward, branching out into my veins. But I am not afraid. Death has snapped at my heels for weeks. Should the gods will it so, it will be a relief to pass into the beyond. Tarek lifts me and carries me to his bed. He lies tucked behind me, cradling me to him. I feel his lips on my neck as his hands explore the length of me. Sweat beads along my spine. With each inhalation, my lungs constrict. Did Jaya know that it would come to this? She was always one step ahead of me. I would not doubt that she foresaw that my path would lead me to this end. A midnight wind ruffles the balcony curtains. Growing lightheaded, I incline toward Tarek. We lie pressed together, the lethal lotion spreading between us. His fingers stroke my hip, his steady caress in rhythm with my banging temples. Tarek's breaths run ragged in my ear. He clutches my hip with sudden force. "What have you done to me?" he says. I do not answer. He rolls me onto my back and presses me down. Redness blotches his face and neck.
"What have you done?"
A sheen of sweat covers his forehead. His gaze loses focus and then sharpens again. His eyes stretch in understanding. Tarek pushes off me and sits at the edge of the bed, holding his head in his hands.
"You're like her in every way. Cunning. Beautiful. Treacherous. Unfaithful."
I kneel behind him and flatten my front to his bare back, sealing what is left of the poison onto him. "I have done nothing Yasmin would not do." He flings me off with his failing strength. The mattress cushions my fall, but the drop leaves me dizzy. He stands and staggers for the Jale. I order my weakening limbs to follow and trip forward into him. We stumble together against the wall. Tarek holds me loosely, petting my cheek.
"I waited so long for you. So very long."
My sight hazes to streaming colors. I prop against him for support, but he cannot handle my weight. We crash to the floor, tipping over the serving table. The Jala and the oil vessel fall with us, knocked out of reach. "You were suffocating me."
"You suffocated her."
I tug at my cramping throat. Every breath thrashes across my ribs. His chest heaves for a saving breath.
"I would have loved you too."
"Your love is toxic. You hurt everyone you care for." My arms can bear my weight no more. I slump beside him. The walls and ceiling spin relentlessly. Heaviness rams me down, 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 into the floor.
"Yasmin."
Tears trickle from his eyes, trained on my face.
"I never stopped loving you, Yasmin. I only ever wanted you to return my love."
His whispered regret saps the last drop of his strength, and his eyes wash of life. My heart races too fast to catch. Half-breaths struggle to live inside me. I start to blink, and my eyelids remain closed. "Jaya, Devon, come for me." An errant wind howls in from the balcony, tugging at my hair and cooling my flushed skin. I crack open an eyelid. Flashes of lightning emblaze the storm-strewn sky. A growl rises up from the land, rocking the ground beneath me. Rain begins to pour with abandon. Stray droplets patter into the chamber, promising relief. Hauling myself to my elbows, I crawl toward the balcony. If I can reach the rain, the water will wash me clean. "Go. Don't stop. Go. Don't." My endurance gives way just inside the door. Fuzziness fogs my sight. I gasp, my throat grasping for nothing. There is no air. Rolling onto my back, I feel numbness creeping into my bones, filling them with emptiness. Vibrations rise up through the floor. Ricocheting raindrops ping my face, begging me to try one last time. On a groundswell of determination, I drag myself through the doorway and collapse in the purity of a new desert rain. Hail and wind lash down, drenching my hair and gathering like dew on my cheeks. I lure in a precious breath, then another. Shutting my eyes, I watch as the banked embers of my ever-blazing soul awaken to a single perfect light. I latch on to that inner star with the entirety of my being, and I burn. 35.
Kali, can you hear me?
The darkness speaks, with a voice that sounds like Devon's.
What's wrong with her? She's been poisoned.
Brock?
I must burn the toxins out of her or she will die,
the second voice says. Hands are placed against my stomach.
Kali, this may hurt.
The voice drifts away, and I am engulfed in the infernos of everlasting destruction. I gasp and writhe against the pain, willing the agonizing heat to quell to a sweet buzz. Soon, but not soon enough, the purifying powers of fire will scrub me clean from the inside out and expel the barbs of Jaya's poison from my body. But right now, my inner light blazes high, raging with the ferocity of a wildfire. The fire is too hot, too close. I cannot escape. Just as I am convinced that I will be consumed by the flames, those same cleansing hands reach into me and draw out the excess heat, dimming my soul fire to an ideal smolder. I open my eyes to lightning crackling overhead, firebolts chased by roaring thunder that rattles my teeth. My vision clears, and I see Devon leaning over Brock. Both are kneeling in the rain.
Are you all right?
Devon asks his brother. Brock's face is flushed. He drops his head in his hands.
I will be. Take care of her.
Devon drapes a robe over me and crouches down. Rain is streaming off his nose. His face is bruised and swollen in spots, but no longer bloody.
You gave me a scare,
he says to me. I clutch his arm and sense the warmth of his flesh, and then I probe deeper, to the flicker of his soul fire. He is real. I throw my arms around him. They told me you were dead. I thought you were dead too. Devon gathers me close. I inhale his familiar sandalwood scent.
Brock dragged me out of the river and took me to Huston. The aquafire healed me, but then they locked us in the temple cellar. Brother Sean freed us.
But Tarek said they found your body.
Huston feigned my death. He thought you would be more motivated to win the tournament if I was gone.
That liar. I was motivated to win the tournament after losing Devon and Jaya. But that does not justify Huston's manipulation or scheming. Devon helps me inside. The Raja's bed has been pushed away from the wall. Sitting at the end of the mattress, I shove my arms through the robe and tie it around my waist. Tarek is splayed on the floor. I expected to hate him even in death, but I feel only emptiness. Devon strokes my back.
Brother Sean told us about what you did in the arena. I wish I had been there to see you win.
It's over. I rest against him, still unable to believe that he is here. I will never set foot in an arena again. Brock rises on the balcony with painstaking care and walks inside. Devon helps him sit beside me. I was delirious from the toxins, but I remember what he did. How did you know I had been poisoned?
I could feel the toxins smothering your inner fire. Fortunately, my powers were able to purify you, or that amount of poison would have done you in. Unfortunately, now I'm feeling the toxins' effects.
Thank you. I hug Brock and see a book near his feet. Shale, I say. Brock bends over the book.
Looks like a regular text, he says,
but he does not pick it up. A rumble shudders the walls, surging up from the floor. I stare out past the balcony at the wide-open palace gates.
The rebels are inside the palace.
Devon takes my hand.
Leave the book and let's go.
No, I say, pulling away from him. Huston has lied to us at every turn. He faked your death and defied my order to not attack until after I lit the torches on the front gate. Until Tarek's heir is instated, Huston will have complete command. If we give him the book, we give him the empire.
If we take the book, he will hunt us.
Devon's quiet warning holds a question. Do I want to provoke the Buta warlord? I could wipe my hands of the war and what becomes of the empire. I have done what the gods asked of me. Tarek is dead, and I have bought my freedom. But what is freedom
without peace of mind. I cannot leave the fate of the Empire in the hands of the warlord. We take the Jale, I say. I won't exchange the reign of one monster for another. Brock looks to Devon for advice about what to do. What I ask of them is no mere task. None of us will have any rest until we locate Prince Ashwin and see that he and Hostin negotiate a conclusion to this war. Devon places a supportive hand on the small of my back.
We follow the Rani.
His words soak deep within me and fill me with appreciation. I trail a careful finger across his bearded jaw. He kisses my lips and whispers,
"My happiness is with you."
"Can you two save that for later?"
Brock says. He shoves the Jala and the oil vessel into his satchel, wincing at the vial of blood. Devon leads me behind the bed which has been pulled away from the wall. The rumbling grows closer, slapping over wine bottles and driving fractures into the ceiling. Brock hurries over.
"That's our signal to run like the demon Kor is after us."
Devon lifts the tapestry of Anu. A lit torch waits in the passageway. Brock plucks the torch from the wall and Devon takes my hand. We chase after Brock, staying in the surrounding puddle of torchlight. The tunnel quivers. Chunks of dirt fall from the ceiling and the walls. Devon drops my hand.
"Run!"
I sprint after him. Clods of dirt plunge down around us and swirling dust obscures the grayish tunnel opening. As Brock hurtles through a curtain of raining rocks, the torch is smacked from his hand. The tunnel seals closed behind us, crushed under the weight of fallen land. We roll downhill, away from the spray of soil, coming to a stop near the riverbank. Before I can rise, a quake carries up from the ground. I look up and see Hostin reopening the blocked tunnel with an explosive rumble. Three figures step out from the dissipating dirt cloud. "Go!" I shout at Brock. He runs into the river with his satchel held above his head, out of the water. Devon and I scramble after him, but a powerful gust of wind blasts us back. We land hard, my broken ribs feeling most of the crash. I shield my eyes from the contrived wind and peer up at Hostin. Anjali and Indira stand behind him. Anjali lets up on her punishing airdraft. She walks without a limp. Indira must have healed her injured leg. I stand, holding my aching side. Devon grips the hilt of his sword. Brock is out of sight, downriver, away and safe with the Jale.
"Disarm them,"
Hostin orders. Anjali pats me down and Indira takes Devon's sword. Finally, they step back.
"Where is the Jale?"
Hostin asks. "The Raja is dead," I reply flatly. "I fulfilled my bargain."
"The bargain was for the book."
"You don't want the Jale for peace," says Devon. "You want it for retribution."
"I want the Empire to pay for what it has done to my people."
The cavern reflects the warlord's temper. Stones from the gradient tumble down in a rocky sluice and splash into the river behind us.
"Your father would be ashamed of you, Kalinda,"
Hostin says. At my narrowing gaze, he says,
"Yes, I know you're Kishan's daughter."
I glower at him in thanks for yet another deception. "Why didn't you tell me?"
"You didn't need to know to agree to our bargain. Everything has a price. The question is, are you willing to pay?"
Hostin's expression hardens to granite.
"Kishan kept a journal," he says.
"I will give it to you in exchange for the Jale."
My breath snags in surprise. My father.
"The final passages were written during his time with Yasmin. He speaks of her and the child she carried."
My heart overflows with yearning to read what my father wrote about me and my mother. Hostin tilts his head back with a knowing smile. He has something that I want, very, very badly.
"Tell me where the Jale is,
and the journal is yours."
"Kali?"
Devon's voice carries a caution. I should not bargain with the warlord. I cannot trust him. But I want that journal. Anjali tips her ear, listening to far-off noises the rest of us cannot hear. "Father, soldiers,
Kalinda, do we have a bargain?